The Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, Episode 27. With over 140,000 miles of railway, the United States has over one-sixth of the world's active railways and almost three times as much as the second highest country, Russia. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another edition of the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast. And today, I've got the good fortune to bring to you an interview with one of my favorite travel personalities in the entire world, Mark Smith, also known as the man in Seat 61, who runs a website, seat61.com. And if you don't know what that is, it is the preeminent website on the net for train travel and train travel advice. And Mark is going to sit down with us today and discuss train travel, discuss why a lot of people don't consider train travel, why they should, and give us some amazing, amazing tips for finding ways to get cheap train tickets and talking about some of the best train travel journeys in the world. He's done many, many of them. So this is an absolutely awesome interview and one of my favorite yet because his website is chock full of great information. He does a fantastic job of breaking everything down for a lot of people who don't know much about train travel like myself. And in this interview, he does the same thing. So buckle up because this is going to be an amazing interview with Mark from seat61.com. Before we begin, if you haven't already, make sure to sign up for our email newsletter. You can do that from the computer. You can also do it from your smartphone. And that's going to be the best way for you to stay in the loop and know when new podcasts are released and also when new posts are put up on the blog. You can get that by going to extrapackofpeanuts.com/free. And you'll also receive our gift to you, the completely free Become a Frequent Flyer Millionaire series. I look forward to having you join the community and the email list. And now let's jump into this great interview. Hello, travel nerds, and welcome to the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, the show that teaches you how to travel more while spending less. I'm Trav, the creator of Extra Pack of Peanuts, and with me today is a man who has forgotten more about trains than most of us will ever know, and whose website always pops up first on Google whenever I'm looking for information on train travel. Mark Smith of seat61.com. Mark, thanks so much for coming on the show and welcome.
Pleasure.
Mark, one of the reasons I wanted to get you on the show was because honestly, your site has provided more value to me than maybe any other travel site in the world. So let me start by just saying thank you so much for the amazing resource that you've created at seat61.com.
Well, you're welcome.
And for those of you who don't know, Mark has been running seat61.com for over 6 years now full time. And one of the neatest things about the site is that it truly is a passion project that you were able to take and then turn into a full-time job, a viable business. Could you just start by telling listeners some of the background of Seat61, why and how you started it, and kind of the growth you've had with the website?
Well, it's about 10 years old now. I used to commute to London for my sins, for work. There was one momentous day when I finally finished my novel. No, not the novel I was writing, the novel I was reading on the train home. And like any commuter, I thought, I'll go into WH Smith, that's our news agent's chain here in the UK, and get something to read on the train home. So it cost me all of £2.95. It was a teach-yourself HTML book. The language, HTML is the language that websites are written in. And of course, I tried it. Luminec, it works. I actually got a web page online. So the subject for a website, for me, was obvious. I've always found it really easy and cheap and fast to take the train, not just from London to Paris or Brussels, but right down to Italy or Switzerland or Spain. But it's become almost impossible to find anyone in the transport industry or the travel industry who will tell you how to do it. So I thought I'd put the information online.
Yeah, and then you did. So you started 10 years, and then what made you then decide to go full-time into your site?
Well, originally, it was just a hobby. And in fact, the first thing I found was an affiliate scheme for Amazon. You know, the book people? If you sign up with them and put special links on your website, they give you a few cents a tiny percentage of what anyone buys having linked through to their website from yours. And pretty soon I'd earn 20 quid, which I spent on a curry. And I thought, this is a great hobby. This is a hobby that buys you curries. So what I didn't think at the time was that actually by doing a bit more of that, you could make it feasible to give up your day job and run it full time, which is just as well, because I've created a bit of a monster. It is a full time job, just keeping pace with the emails and updates that I get and keeping the site updated.
Yeah, and your information is super thorough. If people haven't been to your site, the thing I really enjoy about it is it's not kind of just, hey, here's the overview on how to travel through trains through Switzerland, but I mean pictures and links and really, really thorough, great information that takes everything about that subject that you're talking about and really breaks it down nice, clear, and clean. So obviously, you spend a lot of time on it. I think that's evident with your website.
Oh, it's like the Bletchley Park Station X here, decoding the sort of information from the train industry worldwide. Sometimes I think they're their own worst enemy. They don't do enough to promote their own services. And, for example, if you're an overseas visitor in Canada, you'll probably be sold an expensive rail pass. No one will tell you. You can go directly to the various train company sites and buy a cheap ticket, €35, which is, what, $50, from Paris to Amsterdam, but in advance, just like a budget airline. They just don't tell you this sort of thing. So I thought just by putting it online, letting people look at the site, I can make it far easier for people to travel, even if the industry itself isn't always as good as it should be at telling people how to do it.
Yeah, I've noticed that kind of about the travel industry in general is that you see things and you think this could be so much better done or it could be well done, but they seem to be stuck, you know, 5-10 years in the past a lot of times. And thankfully for your site, you know, you take that and bring it into the present. And that's what I try to do on my site with, you know, hotel points and frequent flyer miles and stuff like that. I think the travel industry at times is its own worst enemy, like you said. So Seat 61 has been invaluable.
Thank you. I mean, they take a lot for granted. I mean, I think if I was selling air tickets, I wouldn't need to show you a photograph of the inside of a plane because you know what that's like. But nobody knows what trains are like. They're all different in every country, which is something nice about it because you take a flight anywhere and it's the same. You take a train and it's unique. It reflects that country. The people don't know what a couchette is. They don't know the difference between a couchette and a sleeper. They don't know what a TGV duplex, double-decker 200-mile-an-hour train is. They don't know what Indian AC1, AC2 classes of accommodation are. So I think it's really important that photographs are from the site to show people what the choices are. And then, of course, the explanation of the best way to buy a ticket, which isn't always through the travel agencies them selling these tickets that people first think of. If you know the right way to go about buying a ticket, you can save yourself a fortune.
I could not agree more. The pictures you have on there are invaluable. And it's amazing to me. Obviously, you've taken all these different train rides, correct? Because I think every picture on your site is pictures that you've taken, except, you know, a few that you reference and say this is from someone else.
Most of them are journeys that I've taken and photographs I've taken, but I haven't been everywhere. And I took an early decision that this wouldn't be about journeys I've made. This will be about providing information for other people to do journeys. And once you take that decision, well, you have to start showing countries like Sri Lanka that I haven't been to myself, but I know what to look for. I do the desk research and I get a huge amount of feedback and photographs from other real travelers that I can put online and still produce a really useful page, I hope, about Sri Lanka, even though I haven't been there. I mean, I've been to India several times. If you've been to India, you know what it's going to be like in Sri Lanka because they're similar history. Yeah, no, I haven't been on all of the train trips I show, but I've managed to do most of them.
Just to point out, the one that you did on Indian train travel, when I first went to India, it was, you know, you couldn't find any information on train travel in India except for your site, and you had the pictures of, what are there, like 10 different classes of Indian rail cars. You know, they're completely different from actually pretty nice ones to really, really bad ones or really poor ones. And that was awesome with all the pictures, because if you don't know what you're getting into in India especially, and I'm sure a lot of other countries, you could really have a rough go of it.
Oh, yes. I mean, that's not exaggerated. There is a mere 8 classes of accommodation on Indian railways. And yes, the process of booking online when you haven't got an Indian mobile phone number, I mean, that is quite an incredible exercise in bureaucracy. It's a great training course for going to India itself. If you can manage to book a train ticket, you'll probably survive the experience of visiting India.
Yeah, that's a good litmus test right there. And most people, especially Americans, are fairly oblivious to train travel. And I know that personally, I had never really traveled by train until I lived in Switzerland at the age of 26. And then I really traveled a bunch by train when I lived in Japan for 2 years, because those countries had, you know, good rail systems and everyone frequented the trains. But tell people, what are some of the perks of train travel? Because there's a lot of them out there, but I know that a lot of what you teach isn't just how to do it, but also maybe why you should take trains.
Well, this is a difficult thing to get over for somebody who has only experienced motorways and air travel, who thinks that the journey from A to B is an interruption to your holiday, is something to be minimized. The idea that you can actually enjoy the journey, stand up and walk around, see things, see scenery, talk to people, bring a bottle of wine, and enjoy yourself on the trip itself. I mean, that's an alien concept to a whole load of people in North America, I think. Trains treat you like a human being. You're not seatbelted in. You can face the person you're talking to. In many cases, you can go and eat in a proper restaurant, even with a tablecloth and waiter service and proper cutlery. Remember, metal cutlery, don't get that on a plane. And some of the scenery you see on the journeys, even intercity high-speed journeys like Paris to Nice or Paris to Barcelona, is absolutely amazing. So the train journeys aren't an interruption to your holiday. They're an integral part of it. And we, of course, have got budget train fares in Europe now. In Western Europe, our train fares work in the same way as budget airlines. If you book in advance, really cheap fares. It's just a question of knowing which website to go to for a particular route.
Yeah, and that leads me into the next question then, because obviously each country is going to be different, or each region is going to be different when it comes to train travel. But what are a few general helpful hints for train travel newbies? Like, how can they make sure they're getting a good price? And what are some of the recommendations that you have for websites to go to in general?
Well, the first rule is book direct with the operator of that train. Or if it's one of these traditional trains in Europe that are run jointly by the two neighboring national rail operators, you should go to the national rail operator website for the country where your train journey starts. So if you want to travel from, say, Milan to Zurich, you'd go to trainitalia.com, the Italian railways website. If you're going in the other direction, from Zurich to Milan, you go to the Swiss railways website, svb.ch. If you're going from Vienna to Venice, you go to the Austrian railways website, oebb.at. Starts at €29. If you're going Amsterdam to Berlin, that starts at €39. From bahn.de, B-A-H-N.de, that's the German railways website. So once you know which website to go to, and that's a lot of what I do on the site, is getting people to the right website for the right journey, you can pick up some really amazingly cheap deals. And usually you just print out your own ticket. Sometimes you have to collect it at the station, but usually these days it's print at home.
And so then, is it always beneficial for people to book in advance? Because I know I was just in Italy, and one of the things I didn't know ahead of time, or until I was almost getting ready to go, was that booking in advance, you can save yourself 70% off what, you know, the booking the day of ticket is. Is that kind of standard across the board?
Well, yes, no. Long distance or short distance. On the long distances, in Western Europe, it now works like budget airlines. So Amsterdam to Berlin starts at €39 if you book 3 months in advance, and it rises to about €116 if you turn up at the station and say, ticket for the next train, please. But of course, on short distance, the railways of Europe operate a turn-up-and-go service. So if you were just going from, say, Florence to Pisa, which is a sort of 50-minute journey, €7, €8, €9, you would just buy the ticket. It's fixed price. There's no reservations. It's like the New York subway. You turn up, you buy a ticket, and you hop on. So short distance, New York subway, turn up and pay it and go. Long distance, Western Europe, definitely worth booking in advance.
And is that standard 3 months out is when most of the tickets go on sale? Is that across Western Europe usually?
Well, it varies. Generally, it's 92 days. There are a few Eastern European countries that still have bookings opening only 6 days ahead. Eurostar and Trainitalia try and open 120 days ahead. But, of course, Americans planning their wonderful once-in-a-lifetime trip to Europe tend to try and book 18 months ahead, and then they wonder why it doesn't work. And I have to explain that it's a bit like walking into Starbucks and saying, I'd like to order a coffee, but I want to drink it in 18 months' time. 90% of UK train tickets are bought less than a month before departure. Because, let's face it, we don't think of seeing Granny in 18 months' time. We decide to see Granny in a few weeks' time, so we book our train tickets a few weeks ahead. not even 3 months. So 3 months is normally plenty for us Europeans, but it does catch out people booking their once-in-a-lifetime trip a whole year in advance.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of different strokes there for people who are actually coming to go on holiday to Europe versus the people who are in Europe already and kind of used to train travel. But that's a really good rule of thumb, the 3 month rule or the 92 day rule. And yeah, like you said, in Italy, I noticed 120 days out and the tickets are, I mean, when we say, you know, 70% off of what a ticket would be if you bought the day of. So definitely the way to go about doing it if you know where you want to go. And we should mention too, Mark, you are locked into that ticket then, right? Like if you buy it for that time, is there any leeway with changing train times or days or anything?
Well, generally speaking, if you buy the cheapest tickets, Rome to Florence for 19 euros, it is no refunds, no changes. You can just turn up at the station, but Rome to Florence is going to be more like 44 euros if you buy a full flex ticket at the station on the way.
Okay, so yeah, so if you know what you're doing and you're already set, then booking ahead is the way to go. If you kind of want to fly by the seat of your pants, I wouldn't recommend getting a non-refundable one because your plans may change. Now, with picking the right seat, is there any recommendations you might have for that? Because I know you always try to travel in a specific seat for a lot of your journeys, but is there recommendations or is there ways that people can pick seats to ensure they get a better train travel experience?
Well, the name of the site, The Man in Seat 61, comes from my practice, my tradition of always booking Seat 61 on Eurostar in first class between London and Paris. I used to treat myself if I was heading off to Vladivostok in Japan or the Crimea or somewhere like that. But a number of websites will allow you to pick a specific seat on a train. That means you can pick a seat that lines up with a window, or in first class you can get a table for two rather than a table for four, or an airline style face unidirectional seat. I always prefer a seat that lines up with a window. I like a table for two if I'm traveling with my wife. I think that's the nicest way, face to face across the table, unlike staring at the back of people's heads as you do on a plane or a bus. Not all sites allow you to do it. And the classic problem, of course, is that some routes you really want to be on one side of the train for the scenery, in which case sometimes you just have to take pot luck or sit in an unreserved seat. If you're heading from Paris to Nice, you want to be on the right-hand side. But when you snake along the coast past all those millionaires' villas and yacht-filled bays, if you're heading from London to Dublin on the train to Holyhead, again, you want to be on the right-hand side along the North Wales coast. That's quite difficult to arrange with a reservation.
And when you're on the train, are they pretty particular about where you sit? Like, I guess if it's full, sure they are, but have you experienced, you know, if you're not able to get a seat reservation ahead and you do go on a train, you're like, all right, Mark said I want to be on the right hand side for this, but I got put on the left hand side. Is it fairly easy then to hop over to the other side, or are they pretty particular about that?
Well, the problem countries are France, Italy, and Spain, where the trains run like planes. They're reservation obligatory. Every ticket comes with a seat reservation. And once you're on the train, although a seat might be vacant, you've no idea whether someone is going to get on at the next station with a reservation for it. Whereas in places like Switzerland, Austria, Germany, and the UK, it's never compulsory to reserve. You can reserve if you like on a long distance, but you can always just buy a ticket, get on, and sit in any unreserved seat. So even if you've reserved your seat, if you're on the right-hand side going from Berlin to Prague, and of course the River Elbe is all the river scenery is on the left, you can move over to any unreserved seat. But it's a lot easier in places like Germany than it is in places like France.
Okay, good to know. And one of the questions I'm sure you get asked often is about rail passes, such as the Eurorail and the Japan Rail Pass, and whether they're worth it. Obviously, it's going to depend how much you're traveling, and we can say, okay, everyone do out the math, and that's probably the best way. But is there a general rule of thumb to follow to know if an all-inclusive ticket will be better than purchasing tickets individually?
Well, let's look at a microcosm. Let's look at one route. Let's say you wanted to go from Amsterdam to Berlin. The fare starts at 39 euros if you book it in advance. It rises to 116 euros if you walk up on the day and say, ticket to Berlin, please. And a rail pass, I mean, it depends how long you buy, but basically you're looking at 70 euros a day for first class unlimited travel. And if you're over 26 years old, there isn't the second class version. You've got to have the 70 euros a day first class. So if cheapness is your first concern, you can't beat the 39 euro advanced purchase, no refunds, no changes to travel plans ticket. Just buy it, print it out and travel, 39 euros, off you go. If you want flexibility and spontaneity, you want to be able to wake up and say, where shall I go today? then the €70 a day unlimited travel is going to save you money over the €116 fare. And there's one other thing to say. If you're under 26, there is a youth Eurail pass, which is second class and which is much better value. It's about 38, starts at about €38 a day for 10 days in a month. Now, if you can get that, that makes sense even compared to the €39 cheap fare.
And with those passes, do you generally have to make a reservation, or can you actually show up on that day, have the pass, and say, I want to get on this train?
Well, Europe divides into the French and their pals and the Germans and their pals, as Europe so often does. The French, Italians, and Spanish operate a reservation obligatory rail network where you have to make a reservation and pay a fee with your pass to go on just about any long-distance train. And you can reckon on €10 per journey surcharge with a rail pass. And in France, there's another problem. There is a quota for rail pass holders. You may find that the quota is very small and sold out. Even if the trains are going out with 25% of the seats vacant, you can't get on it with your rail pass because the quota's gone. On the other hand, Germany, Austria, Netherlands, Switzerland, Denmark, those countries, they operate a reservation optional system. You can always just jump on a train without a reservation, flash your pass, no extra charge. And in those countries, rail passes retain the flexibility and the spontaneity that they used to have everywhere.
And with rail passes, is it always that you have to be a resident of a different country? For example, when I was in Japan, I could not get the Japan Rail Pass because I was living and working there. So I had to be there on a tourist visa, like so when my parents came and visited me, they could get the Japan Rail Pass, but I couldn't. Is that generally how rail passes work in general?
Well, it's often the way. I mean, there's two ranges of rail pass in Europe. There's the Eurail Pass if you live outside Europe, and there is the Interrail Pass if you're resident in Europe. But even if I buy an Interrail pass as a UK citizen, it doesn't get me free travel in the UK. It gets free travel in all the other countries of the Interrail scheme, not in my home country.
We should point out, I didn't know this, Mark, but on your site yesterday, doing a little bit of research, and the USA has a US rail pass, does it not?
It does indeed, although they changed it a couple of years ago, and instead of unlimited travel, they made it a limited number of sectors with your pass. And there's also a slight problem. I believe they switch off the rail pass quota when the train gets 75% full. So in the summer, even if there's 20% of the seats free, you won't be able to use the pass even if you've already bought it. So you might be better off looking at cheap advanced purchase point-to-point for traveling around the States. Having said that, I've crossed the States about six times by train now. It's a fabulous experience. You can get a fare for $212 from LA to New York or Washington, D.C. to San Francisco. 3 days, 3,000 miles, $212. It's got to be one of the world's greatest travel bargains. I don't understand why Americans are queuing up for the ticket office at Penn Station to head to LA by train instead of just taking a boring flight.
Yeah, well, maybe now that we're getting the word out there, maybe there'll be a mad rush to the train stations. And I actually, you know, being an oblivious American, I knew trains went across the country, but until I was on your site yesterday, didn't realize how easy and how amazing that journey actually looked. And in the show notes, I'll definitely link up your whole profile of how you and your family went across states, because you shot a video, you have a whole section of it in pictures, and it really is, it looks fantastic. And it's something that I have definitely put on my list of, you know, for $212 a person to go all the way across the country. Like you said, I don't think you can beat that.
It's a fabulous journey. I think every country slags off its own rail network, and I know the Americans often slag off Amtrak, but I've traveled Amtrak, and those gleaming double-decker superliners that roll across a continent, we've got nothing like that in Europe. They are so impressive. Lounge cars, dining cars, sleepers, if you can afford them, some with ensuite showers. It's an absolutely amazing experience, and you can't beat the scenery. The scenery is world-class, but it's sort of a fare you can afford as an ordinary traveler. You don't have to be an 80-year-old Japanese person on $200,000 a year to be able to afford it.
And with that trip across the U.S., are you able to jump on and jump off? Because you talk a little bit about it in your post and the extra like spurs that you can add on to that trip to really get an even fuller experience.
Well, you can do it however you like. You need a reservation for each leg, so you can't just wave a ticket and jump on and off spontaneously. If you want to stop off, you just book each leg as a series of separate tickets. They've got a multi-leg journey planner at Amtrak.com. If you want to do it in one go, you can travel straight through and book it end-to-end. It's a pretty good website, Amtrak.com, and they now normally do print-up home tickets as well, so they make it really easy, even for us Brits.
Yeah, and I know you talked about if you do want to do it as quick as possible, you want to do it in that 3-day span, there is still time in Chicago, right, to get off and go up into the Sears Tower or the Willis Tower, whichever it's called now. So you do have some time to get off and stretch your legs. You're not just sitting on the train 3 days straight, right?
Oh, we did. We went up the Sears Tower, or the Willis Tower as it is now, and stood on that incredible glass ledge where you're standing, oh, I don't know how many floors up, looking straight past your feet. Quite something.
And there's another way, and we'll, like I said, we'll link it up, but Mark talks about how you can go down south and take a trip down and use kind of New Orleans as the hub and then go across the United States down south. And have you actually done that trip?
Yeah, I've taken the southern route through New Orleans. The Amtrak routes all have their own flavor because of the routes they pass through. The superliners might be the same, but the scenery and the atmosphere on the different routes, there's about 5 different possible routes you can take across the states. I think the California Zephyr, Chicago, Denver, Salt Lake City, San Francisco, is the best. The Colorado Canyons, the Sierra Nevada, the scenery on that route is absolutely unbelievable. But then you've got the Chief that goes through Navajo Indian country from Chicago to L.A. I wondered what Indians do. Apparently, they don't chase cowboys these days. They have rug auctions and do bingo. I didn't know that until I traveled on the Amtrak Chief and listened to the commentary. It's amazing the things you learn when you travel by train. I also have to say that I didn't realize, I'm sorry to admit this, that the Eagles song Hotel California wasn't about a hotel until I booked the Starlight from San Francisco to L.A. They put me right as we went past the California Penitentiary.
Very cool. And so there's actually then built-in tour guides that are on the, well, I guess is it audio tour guides that are on the train then?
That's right. The sections, there was an Indian guide on section of the Chief. There was an expert from one of the railway museums on the California Zephyr, which travels over part of the original, I think it's 1865, transcontinental line. So yes, Amtrak do that, and it just enhances the experience.
Yeah, and I didn't even know that at all. And I'm one of those people who is always curious about what I'm seeing and, you know, wish that I had those Google glasses on at that point and could pull up anything. But are there other train lines that do a similar thing, you know, on a long haul type train where you actually have someone who's kind of telling you what you're going past?
Well, Via Rail does, on, of course, the famous Canadian linking Vancouver, Winnipeg, and Toronto. I mean, the great thing about that train is not just the fabulous scenery, it's the fact that it still uses the original 1955 stainless steel equipment. So actually, the train is a bit of history as well as the history of the landscape you're passing through. And it's got the traditional North American-style bullet lounge at the back. It's got the traditional dome cars where you can sit up high in a glass dome watching the fabulous Rockies go past. I actually like the bit north of Toronto. I mean, it's the Shield, I think it's called, with the lakes and the boulders. Even that, so soon after leaving Toronto, was a fabulous part of the journey.
On these long-haul trips, obviously, they have sleeper trains, and I love the concept of sleeper trains when traveling for a few reasons. One, you save money because you don't pay for accommodations during that night or during those 2 nights or however long you're on a train. And two, you kind of aren't, I guess we'll say, wasting any time during the day traveling, even though we've talked about train travel as being part of the vacation itself. But you're getting between places and you're not having to spend a whole day getting there. So what are your thoughts on sleepers? And do you have any tricks that you use to be able to get a fairly good night's sleep while you're on a sleeper train?
Well, yes, leave in the evening, arrive in the morning, and get a nice sleep on the train. And I think it's probably the most romantic form of travel there is, possibly except ocean liners, but a sleeping car, snuggling down in crisp sheets, reading by your little berth light, the steel wheels swishes on steel rail beneath you. It can be a fantastic way to go. Now, they're getting a bit rare now, even in Europe, where high-speed trains now do runs in perhaps 3 or 4 hours that took a whole night to do 30 years ago. But where you find them, they can be a great fun way to go, and they save a hotel bill as well. Definitely worth thinking of.
And the U.S. trek that we talked about across the country, when you've done that, I know there's different options for renting sleeper cars versus the standard seats. Have you done it in a standard seat and in a sleeper, and is there one that you would recommend?
Well, I travelled in a reclining seat on Amtrak between New Orleans and Los Angeles. That's a two-night trip. And I have to say that if I had to sit up all night, well, I have to use a seat anywhere, Amtrak would be where I choose to do it, because there's as much legroom as there is on a business seat on a plane. I'm 6'2". The tip of my toe was where the seat in front began when I stuck my legs out in front of me. And there's leg rests, and the seat reclines to about 45 degrees. But if you can afford the extra for a room, having your own room and a snug bed at night, and of course the surcharge for the room includes your meals in the dining car, well, there's no better way to see the States. And there's plenty of scenery during the day, get a good night's sleep, and there's something about lying in bed and listening to the North American locomotive horn. It's always a long, long, short, long. I think that's one of the most romantic sounds of travel in the world.
And so to give people a little bit of perspective on the cost, it's about $212 to do it from coast to coast one way if you take the reclining seat. What does it cost if you decided, all right, I'm going to upgrade to the sleeper cabin for the whole trip?
Well, it varies because Amtrak charge much more at busy times and much less at less busy times. But you're talking probably another $500. But that's for the room. And unlike in Europe, where you can book one bed in a shared two or three bed room, in North America, you either have the whole room or not at all. So it's better value if there are two of you occupying both beds than if you pay for the room just for the one of you.
Okay, so it's about $500 for the whole room, but that could be two people. So it could be $250 more per person. And did you say that includes the meals as well?
It includes the meals, but it varies enormously. So you really have to, a bit like airfares, you have to go online and see what they're asking for the date you want to travel.
Great information there. And yeah, if you want to do it cheap, you can do it in the reclining seats. Like Mark said, you know, it's like a business class seat in an airplane, which is way better than an economy seat and trying to sleep on an airplane that way. So you could still have a nice ride even just doing the reclining seat. That's great, Mark. What about, and I know one of the things that people might think if they're listening to this and they haven't done a lot of train travel is safety. And are trains safe? Is it generally safe? And what are things people should do to stay safe when traveling by train, especially if they're going to be on a long haul and they might be sleeping in their seat and stuff like that?
Well, actually, I mean, from an accident point of view, trains are amongst the safest ways to travel. I think in the UK, they've now exceeded the safety of air travel. From a personal security point of view, again, they're usually, it varies from country to country, but usually they're an incredibly safe way to travel, the way the locals travel. So I don't think you've got a problem. It's always good to take advice for the specific country that you're visiting.
Okay. So generally safe. Yeah. And I was thinking of it not even in the safety of the train, but yeah, in the personal possessions and safety like that. But I personally have never had a problem with my possessions, and I've gone on sleeper trains and sleeper buses and stuff like that. Have you ever had an issue on a train travel trip that you've taken?
No, I haven't. And I'll say this, in 10 years of running Seat61, I think I've had two reports of theft on a train. I think there's a few urban myths around, but then you get urban myths about air travel and your baggage being stolen after you've checked it in. So anything can happen out there in the real world, but it's not really something you should worry about. People travel by train all the time. We certainly do here in Europe.
And I know the only story I've ever heard of two girls getting their backpacks taken was when they were in India, and it was on one of the lower class trains. I don't know which of the eight levels, but it was far down the line. You know, I think that there is a lot of people hear these horror stories of one person maybe getting their baggage stolen or something like that and think it's commonplace. But like you said, you've been doing it 10 years and very, very few instances of stuff like that, of possessions getting stolen. So I think we can safely say that it is a very safe way to travel. On your site, Mark, you write, we've talked about in-depth reports on train travel. I think you have maybe 60 or 70 countries listed now, a lot that you have been to, and then some you've said you've gotten information from other travelers and kind of done the desk work yourself. What are some of your favorite countries for train travel, or just your favorite train trips in general? So people who are looking to take a train trip for the first time, what are some things that would really wow them?
Well, I've got a thing about mountains. Doesn't everyone? So Switzerland has got some fantastic trips. Now, there's two trips, and the argument rages on about which one is the most spectacular alpine rail trip to take. One is the Glacier Express from Zermatt to St. Moritz, and the other is the Bernina Express from Chur near Zurich down to Tirano in Italy with connections to Milan. The argument's going to rage and rage. It really is. I can't decide which is the best. You'll just have to take both. And in fact, you're going to have to take each route twice because they are completely different experiences through the summer Swiss meadows compared to doing it through an alpine winter wonderland in the depths of January or February.
So there you go. So you have to go to Switzerland at least twice, once in the spring, summer, once in the winter, and then you have to take the train rides two different times. Now, for that, I know the one reason when I was living in Switzerland I didn't end up taking those trips was because it was fairly pricey. Is there any way that people can get a deal on that? Is that something you can book earlier and get a better deal on, or is it kind of across the board always going to be a little more expensive?
Well, Swiss train fares are quite expensive by general European standards anyway. But these two trains charge the regular Swiss fare. It's not a special megabucks tourist fare. They just put a fairly modest surcharge on top if you want to use the panoramic coaches on the Dastur Express or Bernina Express themselves. You can do the same route on the scheduled trains, which run sort of every hour. But you won't save that much money, only the, you know, a few euros or a few Swiss francs on the supplement for the panoramic coaches themselves.
Okay, so the panoramic coach is well worth it for the few extra francs.
Yeah, it's not much extra to use the panoramic coaches, and it is nice to have that wraparound glass window because you want to look up at the mountains as well as down at the river gorges and the boulders and the meadows downstairs as well.
What about, and you talked about your travel across the U.S. and how much you like that. Are there other specific ones other than the Swiss one and the U.S. one that you think people, if they are dipping their toe into train travel, it's something that they should start with because they're really going to get kind of the best experience?
Well, Switzerland's a good place to start because it's a very civilized European country, high standards of cleanliness and so on. At the other end of the scale, if you want something a bit ropier and a bit more adventurous, try the railways of Burma. Take the Rangoon to Mandalay Express. The overnight ones have a sleeping car. You'll be bumped up and down, even at 50 miles an hour on the track there. But they've got some fantastic branch lines that branch off into the wilderness, into the mountains, climbing mountains on a switchback, going round in a spiral to gain height. And the fares are dirt cheap, and it's the way the Burmese travel. So like so much of the time when you take the train, you are not a tourist spectating through the windows of a tour bus. You are a participant. You're actually in the country traveling the way the locals do. And that gives you so much more compared with just doing the tourist thing and playing in the tourist bubble.
I know you also mentioned on your site the Singapore to Bangkok route. I've done a decent amount of traveling through there, and that is a very, very nice way to get from one big city to another and see some of the countryside. And also, it's super cheap, like you mentioned. Most of the stuff in Southeast Asia with fares are going to blow your mind with how cheap you can actually get around, and fairly local with some of the trains there.
That's right. Singapore to Bangkok, which is about 1,200 miles. You can do it on a weekly luxury train that your local travel agent will bite off your hands to sell you for over, what is it, must be about $2,000 in utter luxury. Or you can do exactly the same run on the scheduled daily trains for about $60. It takes about 48 hours. It includes a comfortable sleeper with crisp, clean sheets for each of the two nights. You can stop off at no extra charge at places like Kuala Lumpur and Penang and at the beaches of southern Thailand. A fantastic journey, really easy to do. You'll meet lots of other Western backpackers doing the run as well. And you don't need to book it in advance. You can just go there and buy tickets as you go.
Yeah, and as someone who has done that route a few times on the bus, which actually at some point was better, like I think the Chiang Mai to Bangkok bus was really nice, but then the Bangkok bus down to the islands, down to Hat Yai and down to Krabi and stuff was absolutely awful. So I would take my chances with the train next time because I think you're going to get a more standard, consistent level of service for sure.
Well, I have to say that long distances of a bus is not my first choice. But on the train, where you've got a restaurant car serving Thai food, a bed for the night, if it's overnight, you can stretch out and lie down, that's usually much better.
I do want to touch a little bit because part of your site does discuss ferry travel, and I have not done much ferry travel at all. I am looking, because of your site, to do, I think it's called the Sail Pass, where you go from London over to Dublin. Can you speak a little bit about ferry travel and maybe if there's a specific ferry or two that you would recommend people use? that they might not think about?
There's a couple of ferry products that are really worth mentioning. One is the Sail Rail tickets between any station you like in Britain and Dublin, or indeed anywhere in Ireland. They combine the train and the ferry on one ticket. You can go from London to Dublin for about £38 using the train and ferry, and it's a great journey. It's the traditional way to Ireland, the way everyone travelled before they invented planes. You take it right the way along out of London's Euston Station, past the Grand Union Canal, along the North Wales coast to Holyhead. Then you board the ferry, which takes you across the Irish Sea. And you can sit in the lounge, drinking a glass of nice red wine in the afternoon as the Irish coast approaches before you arrive in Dublin late early evening. Wonderful way to go. £38. Book it online. It's a bargain. The other one that's worth talking about is the London to Amsterdam Dutch Flyer. This is another combined train-ferry-train ticket, £45 plus the cost of the cabin. You can leave London at 7:30 in the evening. You get to Harwich about 9 o'clock at night, check into this floating hotel, the Stena Line Super Ferry, which cabins have got ensuite showers, they've got free Wi-Fi, they've got satellite TV. Cabin costs £30, the train ticket costs £45. And the next morning, 7:45, you arrive at Hook of Holland, walk out of the ferry terminal onto the train, which takes you to Rotterdam, and then another train on to Amsterdam, arriving about 9:48 in the morning. And it's just saved you a night in the hotel as well.
Wow. So all told, you're looking at £75, maybe roughly $120, $130 max to go overnight from London to Amsterdam.
That's absolutely right. And when you see the prices of hotels in London and in Amsterdam, that really is a bargain.
And for anyone who's listening, you know, we talk a lot about frequent flyer miles. One of the reasons that I'm actually flying out of Dublin is because it is very expensive to fly out of London because they put on the UK taxes and all that stuff. So instead of flying out of London, I'm actually taking, like you said, the Sail Rail pass and, you know, £35 to go have an awesome scenic journey through England, get to Dublin, spend an extra day in Dublin or two, get to see that, and then flying out on Aer Lingus from Dublin to JFK using my British Airway points. It's only 20,000 one way. So that's how you can build a trip using, you know, airfare, which we have to use to get across the ocean for the most part, and build it in with this amazing rail experience like Mark talked about.
Yeah, absolutely. And the train ride, of course, is a chill out journey. Get a good book, get a bottle of wine, chill out.
Yeah, my wife would love you. A bottle of wine and a book. She's sold on that. So I actually told her the other day, hey, this is how we're going to be getting home at the end of May. I want to fly out of Dublin. I'd like to see Dublin. And I just happened to find this Sail Rail pass that Mark was talking about that I had never known about before. And this looks like a fantastic journey. And for £38, I mean, how can you beat that, right? Where do you then see, Mark, in the future, train travel going? Is it growing in popularity? Is it kind of staying the same? Is it dying off? What do you see happening in the future for train travel?
Well, funnily enough, I've seen a change in the typical 661 user over the 10 years I've been running the site. When I started, the typical person who wanted train information from the UK to Europe either had a phobia of flying or was medically restricted from flying, or they knew they particularly liked train travel. What I'm seeing now is people who tell me two things. They're fed up to the back teeth with flying and airport security and being treated like a naughty child and told to sit down, belt up and do what you're told. They want a low-stress alternative where they actually see something. And they also want to cut their carbon footprint. And I suspect it's 80% one, 20% the other, but those are the two things they say, low-stress and low carbon. So it's almost as if train travel to the continent has become mainstream. And what helped is we're now seeing high-speed trains operating in Europe and expanding in Europe. Paris-Amsterdam in 3 hours. Nobody flies that anymore. Paris to Zurich takes only 4 hours, 5 minutes. There is no check-in. You can stroll out of your hotel, across the road to the station, walk up to the train, hop on, any time after departure. 4 hours, you're in central Zurich and can stroll to your hotel at the other end. Again, nobody flies that. And the latest, only in December, we've seen high-speed trains link Paris and Barcelona direct in 6 hours 25. And again, remember, the one-hour flight is going to take you 5 hours, and it's not a flight. It's a train to the airport, and then a check-in at the airport, and then a flight, and then another train. That relay race, 5 hours, train, 6 hours 25 of chill-out, past the wonderful hilltop villages of the Rhone Valley along the Mediterranean. Look out for the flamingos on the lakes as you pass. in the south of France, then wash out to the Pyrenees. Mount Canigou is clearly visible when you leave Perpignan, and then you arrive in the centre of Barcelona, not at an airport miles outside. That route, I think, and a fair start at €59 for that, is going to be very, very popular.
And I am with you. I mean, as someone who writes a lot about flying, you know, this kind of seems heretical, but I am with you 100%. You know, I fly to get to where I want to go, but I don't enjoy the process. And I know some people out there really enjoy the process of flying. I'm not one of them. I try to find the easiest and cheapest and best way to travel. And I'll tell you, the train travel we did through Italy just last month with, you know, going from Milan to Venice, Venice to Florence, Florence to Rome, and then back to Milan, we kind of did that triangle there. It was absolutely fantastic. I mean, you could get on the train. Most of the train stations are located, you know, in the center of town so that you don't have to get to the airport or anything like that. You hop on the train, you read a book. It's a really nice way to travel. It's fairly cheap, especially if you book ahead of time like we've been talking about. And then you get off the train and that's it. You know, you have your bag with you and you don't have to deal with people harassing you or anything like that. You know, I even found out, which I didn't know, if you buy your tickets ahead of time, all you needed was to write down the, I guess they call it the PNR code, and you didn't even have to print out a ticket or even get a ticket at the station. You just gave them the PNR code and while you were on the train and they knew that you had your ticket. Yeah, really, really easy, really simple. And I'm really starting to take the train travel a lot, and especially in Europe, you guys have, like you said, fantastic high-speed trains that can get you places really, really quick.
It's certainly easy in Italy with their ticketing system. I often say you can write it in biro on your hand if you like, although probably not a good idea. Better to print out the booking details. Yeah, Venice to Rome, 3 hours, 45 minutes, no check-in. Only 10 years ago, the airlines held a huge market share on Venice to Rome. Now, nobody flies in their right mind unless they're really on business and live next to the airport.
I have nothing but good things to say about the train travel I've been doing recently. I think you're right. The high-speed trains coming in, you know, like how now it's in, now in Italy, they have two competing high-speed rail trains, which, correct me if I'm wrong, but what was it, 10 years ago when the first one went in, right?
Yeah, and Italy is at the forefront of open competition on high-speed routes with two operators going head-to-head. And the funny thing is, they're both gaining passengers. They've really expanded the market. And the new private operator, which is very, very good, Italo, is galvanizing the state-run operator, Trenitalia, to pull its socks and improve its services as well. So the big winner with that high-speed competition is the passenger.
I took Italo and the regular one, the one run by Ferrari, the state one run, because I wanted to actually experience both of them based on your recommendation, and both were great. You notice the Italo one is a little nicer and newer, and that just, like you said, galvanizes the other one to get better, and it keeps the fares down and all. So we end up winning out in the long run. So I just really want to tell anyone out there listening, if you haven't done a lot of train travel, which a lot of Americans haven't, and I'm kind of just starting down that path because I lived in Japan and realized how easy it was, I really urge you to go out and do it because it's easy, it's usually cheap, and it gives you an experience that you cannot get from 35,000 feet in the air. So yeah, and we thank you, Mark, because your website is invaluable. What do you have in the pipeline that people should be looking out for, either personally or professionally, and where are you kind of heading off to next?
Well, it's a major task just keeping the site updated with all the changes. We've seen the new Paris-Barcelona train start, and we're going to see a Geneva-Barcelona high-speed service start sometime this year. So just keeping up with all the changes that are happening really keeps me busy. But what I want to do is keep traveling, keep trying out new routes, and putting that experience and that expertise online so that it can help other people rediscover the joys of traveling overland in a world where travel is becoming the same airline journeys. You can travel overland in so many countries and you'll get so much more out of the journey.
Yeah, and I completely agree. And Mark, thanks again so much for coming on the show. I've already mentioned this, and I do not say this lightly at all, but your site really is one of the most valuable resources on the internet for travelers, and you do an amazing job making train travel easy and understandable, because we've talked about how it's not easy and understandable from the train operator's point of view, and maybe they make it hard, but once you figure out how to do it, the actual train travel is usually easy and pretty easy to understand. So I really want to tell you thank you so much for that, because it takes a lot of the mystery out of it and allows people like me who might not know what they're doing, who might be scared because they haven't done it much, to know what I'm getting into before I do it. So again, I don't say it lightly. Your site is one of the most highly recommended that I have to any traveler. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
before I let you go, could you just remind people one more time where they can come connect with you and how they can find you online?
Well, the site is called The Man in Seat 61, and it's www.seat61.com.
I see that you're on Twitter and that you respond fairly regularly. If people have questions, is that a good way for them to get a hold of you? Is it better to email you?
It is. I tweet regularly when news items come up or when I'm on one of my journeys, at Seat61, all in words. And you'll find me there. And you'll also find me on Facebook.
All right. Great. Mark, thanks again so much for coming on. You've got me dreaming about my next train trip. I can't wait to hop over to Europe in April and start taking those trains.
No problem. Anytime.
Listeners, I've said it a few times throughout the interview, and I'm going to say it one more time. Mark Smith and his site, seat61.com. If you have not been there yet, you have to go check it out. You will be blown away by not only the amount of information there and how thoroughly he has covered his expertise in his subject matter of train travel, but also how easy it is to navigate and how easy it is to understand things that a lot of times can be very complex or very confusing. So Mark does an incredible job breaking down train travel. He really is the expert on the internet about train travel. So if you're someone who's been listening to this and you've thought, man, I really got to start traveling by train some more, I really want to take some of these trips that he's talked about, make sure to go over to seat61.com, check it out. If you're someone who's unsure about train travel, you just don't know whether you want to do it, go to seat61.com. I'm sure by checking out some of his awesome pictures, he's going to talk you into the idea of train travel. Personally, I've only done it a little bit, and every time I have, I've had an awesome experience. So I highly urge you to start thinking about train travel. As Mark did mention, it does cut down on your carbon footprint dramatically versus flying. A lot of times it can be cheaper and it can be easier. So start thinking about train travel, start thinking about trips that you're taking. If maybe you can incorporate train travel into that, I will of course be putting all types of pictures and recommendation stuff of any time that I actually take train travel, and I'll be doing that some in the coming months. So I just urge you to think about train travel in a different way, especially if you're American. You probably haven't done much train travel, but it really is an amazing way to see different parts of the country. And seat61.com is the place to go to save money on train tickets and to learn about how you can get the train tickets for wherever you're going. So definitely head over there, check it out, seat61.com, one of my favorite travel resources in the entire world. Lastly, if you're listening to a travel podcast, that probably means that you want to travel more, and I want to help you do that. And the easiest way for me to help you travel more while spending less is for you to go over and sign up for the Extra Pack of Peanuts email newsletter. And you can do that by going to extrapackofpeanuts.com/free. By signing up for the newsletter, you'll be getting email updates anytime we put up a new podcast, as well as anytime we put up a new post to the site. You're also going to get our free copy of Become a Frequent Flyer Millionaire, which is going to set you on the path of how to start acquiring frequent flyer miles and really start traveling around the world for next to nothing. So extrapackofpeanuts.com/free. You can sign up for our email newsletter. You can stay abreast of everything that's happening on Extra Pack of Peanuts, and I can help you start to travel more while spending less. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in once again to another edition of the Extra Pack of Peanuts podcast. I'll see you next week. And until then, happy free travels.